Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit in creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have Jill Amy Sager, who is the author of this brilliant book that I just finished called Guidance from the Universe, Hopeful Messages for Everyday Challenges. This is a very, very special book. It made a huge difference for me, and I recommend it for everybody. Let's see, only if you're human. So if you're human, I recommend it for you. So welcome, Jill Amy Sager.
Thanks for having me.
I'm happy to be here. Yeah, it was so great. So can I just tell them what happened? So when I first met Jill, and we were getting to know each other, and I was lamenting about how I had thought I would have this retirement income by now, and blah blah blah, a little bit of a victim, and she got some guidance, and that's what she does. She gets guidance. That's what the book's about. And what she told me was to be grateful for what I have, that I actually have financial stability, and to be grateful for that. And so I've carried that into other areas of my life, and I feel so much less of a victim. I'm not focusing on the lack anymore, and I'm focusing on abundance. And so thank you for that difference. And if that is a little bit of a preview of what you can get from her book, I recommend it. If you're focusing on lack, I recommend this, or I recommend talking to Jill, because that just one little thing made a huge difference for me. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. You know, I just got a little teary-eyed when you were talking, because so deep in my belief system has to do with what we believe about what I believe for myself, mm-hmm. and then what I attract. And that is so deep in my belief system these days that I can't get off. It's like solid like a rock. And it's solid because I have been working with tarot cards, which is all about understanding myself, helps me to understand myself, and also the information that I channel from the universe, which is on a whole other level, unexpected in my life. And these lessons that I've learned, and also watching, like hearing what you just said about how it helped you, and having clients who give me that feedback, I've seen too much now not to believe fully that when we, you know, using that word victim, when we remain a victim to our circumstance, that's then all we can see. And we don't get to live the lives we really want. And I've seen that for myself. And so, so thanks for sharing that, because I too now am solidly in a more optimistic place in my life because of what I get back from being in that headspace, right? I mean, I know, you know, we all know this. It's not about the challenges. We all have challenges. It's about how we get through the challenges. Mm-hmm. And I am just grateful that I've changed so that I understand that that's the truth of my life, and how it can be better by being better, by loving myself more.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm thinking we could go to one of two directions. One is, I definitely want them to know about your childhood and what you went through there. Well, maybe three things. Okay, I'm going to write them down so I don't forget. One is your childhood. The second is how you first heard the guidance and how you got into that. And then I forget what the third was. I think probably when things shifted for you, you know, and also, okay, four. All right. I got a lot of things. Also how you wrote the book, because there's all the pieces of guidance. Did they come all together? Were they from pieces and all that stuff? So anyway, hopefully we'll get to all that. Because I just am interested myself. Okay, so all right, let's. I'm going to answer my own question. Let's go to when you first got the guidance, and then we can go backwards.
Sure.
When did that first happen? You're just working regular jobs, right? And then what?
Yeah. Well, you know, it really did start with tarot cards. It was the 70s. I had moved from the Bronx. I was 18 to San Francisco, the Bay Area, and a friend gave me a tarot reading. I knew nothing about tarot. It was just crazy. And that first reading, I felt like the cards knew me. It was so accurate to my situation. So the next day she gave me a deck of cards and I took to them. I wanted to learn more. And I did. And I studied and studied and studied. And word of mouth spread. I'm telling you how this happened because it was through starting to read for other people that I started to get feedback. Oh, this is accurate. This is happening, you know, that kind of thing. And so my connection with tarot started to grow. And that connection with tarot became really increased my own intuition. That's where it started. And I think for a lot of people, opening up that creative side of the brain, that right side, I was also a musician. So that whole creative, intuitive side was being fed, I would say. You know, tarot is pictorial. I mean, they're pictures, right? And that kind of opens up all of that too, that intuitive knowing. My intuition just got stronger and stronger and stronger. I saw things in the cards that couldn't have been there. And that kind of led me to an understanding that there was, that I could trust. I could trust my own self. I could trust my sense of things. There was a nod to yes. And when I moved to Oregon, I met other people. I met people who were also reading tarot. And I met people who were channelers, psychics. I had friends introduce me. And I started to see through them what was also possible. Something more than intuition, some kind of connection, but it was kind of a door that opened. So having those mentors, seeing it was possible, also helped me to not imagine it was possible for me, just offered, you know, like that mentorship or that support. Wow, this is happening. It's really happening. And then without wanting or asking, it did happen to me. And it started with a vision. I write about this in the book and in the preface, like kind of a Tinkerbell little fairy that came to me telling me it was a gift from the universe, telling me that things would be okay. And I was going through a very difficult time. And I believed her. I took it. It felt so accurate and so right. It hit me right at my core that I would be okay, even though, you know, minutes earlier I'd been crying in my car. I felt like my world was collapsing. And then I started to automatic writing. And you're not the first person to ask when, how. I don't even remember. I just know I had a piece of paper and I started to get information for myself in that same vein, that things would be okay, that life was good, that just went on and on and on and on. And that's really how the book came about, because I ended up writing down messages and also hearing messages that I wrote down later on different topics, right? Grief and suffering and loss and letting go. And these messages that came to me were so wise. I am not someone who's well-versed in religious studies or philosophy. It was greater than I could understand. And that's where the book started, actually, wanting to get those messages out. And a funny story about that. I mean,
can I just ask one thing? Did they come like are just opened up to emotions? Did they all come for emotions together, or did you have like a lot of notes and then you put them into the categories?
Yeah, it was over time. They did come. That's a really good question. Each one came not like, oh, this is, we're going to talk about emotions, but that's what it was. And then, of course, I titled them. I looked to see, wow, this is about emotions. This is about loss. So it really came like that. But, you know, the funny thing in terms of the book is that I really never did any of that downloading of information for the world. Mm. It was something I was using for myself. And then, of course, when clients came, I would also, you know, tell them what I had learned. But at some point, the universe said to me, do you think these messages were only for you? That it was a very clear message. Mm. I was a writer. I was already writing. And I was like, yeah, thanks. It's been really helpful for me and clients. And no. So really, the push was really, you know, write. Get these messages out there. And at that moment, too, it felt very real. Like mm-hmm. I was hoarding them for myself. And mm-hmm. they had given me so much. They, whatever this energy is.
Yeah.
Explained had given me so much. I thought, yeah, I'll do that.
So just to kind of explain the book to them. So she has each chapter, and there's and obviously I recommend you get the book, but like, you know, awareness, emotions, anger, and letting go, jealousy, gratitude, just, you know, 30 different chapters, ending with, there's one on shame, time, faith, suffering, joy, and perfection. And they get you. So it starts with the guidance. And then Jill has told her own story about what she learned, which is, you know, like, I think I would agree with your friends. It was great to read the guidance, but then when you put it into your own story, that was so, relatable. It was moving. It was courageous. It was everything, but it all seemed to fit perfectly, you know? And then she follows it up with reflections and questions for us. So each chapter is its own bounty, I would say, you know, just so great. If you're, I would say for the audience, if you're going through anything, if you're struggling with any of those, and I didn't read them all, but this is just brilliance. Well, it's guidance, but it's also Jill's personal story where, you know, we're going to cover that, but she went through a lot and was kind of in a bad place, right? Mm-hmm. At some point, but she uses that for us. She gives us the gift of her story. So I would say that.
Yeah. And Hillary, so my question to you is, did you feel uplifted? In other words, like, oh, this is support for me, or to see that change is possible. Was that something that you felt, or were there other things that you got from my personal stories that would help you, the reader?
Well, I felt like I got to know you. So that was, you know, like with what you went through, I totally could relate. But like, you know, there were some like the shame one. I put page, you know, I put the pages down. So what chapter is this? So this one was shame. You know, so shame is a cloak that humans must learn to remove. You know, life is mysterious, life is fine. You know, so that was just like, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. If joy, and then the one on joy I thought was really great because, and I, that's what I say when you watch the interview, you'll see I say joy is our, what is it? Our,
it's our birthright.
Yeah, our birthright. That's exactly what is in my introduction. Mm-hmm. And joy is our birthright. And the suffering, I think the suffering was also, you know, your belief in the need to suffer is what keeps suffering alive. So that was this. Suffering is not an acceptable destination.
That was such an eye-opener for me. That was such an eye-opener for me. When I got the message about suffering and how we just, unfortunately, and I'm using that word, learn through suffering, because when we get our asses kicked, we pay attention.
Yeah.
And when we're happy and joyous, we, you know, we're talking about, you know, humans on a general level, but generally when we're happy, we take it for granted. And it's through the suffering that we are can change and grow. But the thing that was so profound for me was learning that it didn't have to be about suffering.
Right.
You know, and I didn't know that. I mean, I just took suffering for granted. And I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of religions say that there's really, that's our entry point. It is an entry point to change, but it doesn't have to be. And I was like, I don't know, my mind was blown. I thought, agree on this, so that's what it is. But hey, maybe I could learn from joy too. Maybe I can learn from happiness too. You
right?
Know? Yeah, it really changed my view about things. Really and, did.
I mean, they're all each one just has so much. You know, like the shame. Shame is a suff. So it says transform shame, forgive self, so you know compassion toward self. This will alleviate shame and make you whole. Whole is your birthright. Whole is you. Alive, joyous, and free. Peace be with you without shame. We love you. So that, you know, to me, shame ties in with the suffering. Mm-hmm. Because why are we suffering? You know, but if joy is our birthright, mm-hmm. then hello, like, what are we doing? What are we doing here, right? Why aren't we having more joy? You know, I think it's great. So, all right. So let's talk about your childhood. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Just to give people an idea of why you might have been suffering and all that. Do you want me to summarize what I learned, or you want to say it?
I can talk about it. I was born with one leg shorter than the other. And it's my left leg. About 2.5 inches.
Wow.
And the leg was normal, but it was 2.5 inches difference. And so I wore a built up shoe. As a kid, you know, I got made fun of and all of that, but I had surgery when I was 9. My parents decided to lengthen the leg, and that was a risky surgery, but they decided to do that. And it screwed up the entire leg, basically. And I was left.
How can you lengthen a leg? Like, what were they trying to do? Do you know?
Well, the more common, this is in the 60s, and the more common surgery for a shorter leg was to shorten the good leg, the other leg, like that wasn't. And that was the more tried and true. But according to my parents, it would have left me very short. I'm about five. I was about, they figured I'd be, the doctors figured I'd be about 5'2". I think if I had had the other leg shortened, I would have been 5 feet. I don't know. But my parents decided to lengthen the other leg. And how they did that was, this gets a little bit maybe for those of you who are squeamish, but basically they broke the femur. And then every day, and I was in some kind of crazy app, my leg was in a crazy apparatus. And every day the doctors came in and literally turned a screw to stretch the leg. And it was very painful. I was 9. I was in the hospital that first time for about 6 months. Basically what happened, there were pins through my leg. Basically the pins went through my sciatica. I lost movement of my foot, my knee, and that never came back. So I walk with a pretty profound limp. And also although I did get a little bit of a stretch, I still have to wear a built-up shoe because I'm about 1.5 inches still shorter. That leg is shorter. So, and I ended up, because I became a more disabled child, more visibly disabled, braces and all this kind of stuff. And then I developed scoliosis, which is curvature of the back, because I'd been sitting in wheelchairs for a long time, walking with crutches and braces. And I ended up in what they call a Milwaukee brace to stabilize the curve. I mean, it really was between the ages of 9 and 12, 13, I should say, I was in and out of hospitals and dealing a lot with being different and being pulled out of mainstream society. Back then, living in the Bronx, schools weren't mainstreamed. So I was in what they called health classes. I was with other kids who were disabled. The education wasn't that great. I was riding buses with developmentally disabled kids, which at that time, people thought I was developmentally disabled. It was an interesting way to grow up. Definitely, definitely feeling that I was on the outside looking in. of what other kids were experiencing. By the time I got to junior high school, wearing a Milwaukee brace at a very...
Can you explain what that is for people?
Well, you know, back then it was very visible. You're basically wearing a metal, you know, there's nothing that's going to hide that brace. There are two bars behind, one bar in front. You're wearing a girdle. You have this piece that's sticking out like this to keep your neck, you know, rigid. There was no way to hide it. And I was in junior high school with that. And I think that feeling shame. And also back then, I think maybe unlike today, adults kept asking what was wrong with me. Mm. And unfortunately, I didn't have the support of my parents, who were like, you're fine, everything's good. You know, there wasn't a lot of emotional support. Mm. So I took on, you know, to kind of end this whole thing, but I took on this idea that there was something wrong with me. And I certainly was paranoid, people staring at me. I grew up in a city, taking subways, taking buses, always feeling like there was something that I should be, like I should hide myself. Never quite feeling like I could, like I fit in. And always, if someone was staring at me in a restaurant as I walked through, I definitely was like, oh, are they, as I got older, you know, oh, are they staring at me because of my limp? Absolutely. It never dawned on me that they could be staring at me because I was hot or beautiful or any of that, you know? So, yeah, there, and also too, not being able to go, not being able to wear certain kinds of shoes. Mm. You know, I just felt, I always felt what's the word? Not just different, but really out of step. I think that's how to say it. A lot of shame, a lot of feeling out of step.
So did you just want to hide? Were you just, you know, like, but you couldn't.
Right. But,
like, how did that make you feel?
Right. I am grateful that I have the personality I have, and maybe which is, I'm not a quitter. And I just felt the shame. I felt the embarrassment. I left the house every morning feeling like there was something wrong with me. But I have always had a lot of gumption. I was born, I was born with that, you know, belief that you just keep going. And maybe to my parents' credit, because they didn't baby me around this, they didn't hold me back. They didn't give me a lot of support, but they didn't also hold me back and baby me. You know, I had to take subways by myself. I had to do everything I was doing. They didn't protect me.
Yeah.
And so I never felt like I had a choice but to keep going, keep moving, you know, keep life happening.
Wow.
It was tough.
But you kept, well, that's amazing. Did your parents ever say, gee, we picked the wrong choice or any of that? Or did they not mention it?
No, both my parents are past now. My mom and I had a pretty difficult relationship. It was something she never did want to talk to me about. My dad and I had a more emotionally closer relationship. He was willing to understand that my life was hard, although he wasn't. That happened later when I was an older adult. We had those conversations. My mom wrote a letter telling me, this was just a few years ago before she died, that she would never talk to me about my disability or what happened. And I knew that already, but there it was in black and white, which was very validating because it's something I sensed. I could never approach the conversation with her. It was something she couldn't handle. Maybe her own guilt. I don't know. I can't speak for her, but it was a conversation we never had. I kind of thought, you know, hope springs eternal. And I thought perhaps right before she died, she would just finally say something.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. And I've lived with that and I'm reconciling that even today over the last couple of years since she's been dead. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I just want to tell you, I mean, good for you for having the gumption, and, you know, good for your parents for not babying you and making you weak about it. Obviously, you got stronger. But the thing is that I always felt there was something wrong with me. Just that was just my like core conversation and a shame and whatever. And, you know, when I really took it apart, I did a lot of transformational work. It was like, that's just what we humans do. We have that conversation in some form, you know, I'm not the right one or whatever. Everyone has one. So I realized that, but I was in a course over the summer and I stood up and I said, I don't know what's going on with me. And, you know, this was supposed to bring out stuff. So I was, you know, we were supposed to have stuff bubble up. And I said, I don't know what it is. And anyway, what it boiled down to was that I felt that I was different. You know, I didn't feel like I fit in. I felt like I was different. And so the guy who was leading the course, oh my God, he said, I don't know how many people were in the guest, but he goes, how many people know that Hillary's different? And so everybody raised their hand. And so I was like, oh, because that was something I was hiding, right? That's what it was. That was something I was hiding that I didn't want anyone to know. So they all raised their hand. And I said, well, I guess I wasn't doing a good job of hiding it, right? He goes, but then he said to everyone, who else feels like they're different? Everybody raised their hand. And I realized, oh, we all feel that way. You know what I mean? It actually makes me the same as everyone else, not different. So, you know, I just say that because it was such a beautiful moment for me to realize, like, A, I didn't have to hide it. B, we all feel that way. And, you know, what I was telling you before was that I have never met anyone who felt like they belonged.
That's such a great understanding. It, you know, it really is something that guidance, you know, this universe energy that I channel taught me really at the most profound level really has to do with our perception, right? Mm. Yeah. And it's so interesting because I came to that too. It's in the book. There's a chapter in the book and I wish I could remember which one, but I write about the theme. I write about how I was like in my 30s, I think I remember. And I'm carrying the shame and this feeling of, like you said, of feeling different and feeling out of it. And I was in a situation where that was being magnified. Mm. And as I'm sitting, and I left that situation, as I'm sitting there, the message from, I just for the first time, and I got a message from the universe about how I I'm okay, I'm beautiful, whatever. And I realized that being different for the first time in my life, rather than it being this terrible thing,
yeah,
I thought, oh my gosh, I'm unique. What is wrong with that? Right. You're different. Yeah. Everyone raised their hand. Yeah. Hillary's right. She's uniquely her. But up until that point, that perception was that if I'm different, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So amazing to see that change happen. I mean, I feel that. I mean, I'm talking about myself. To just in a moment have a perceptive change, a perceptive twist that changes everything. And I am, you know, I'm a little teary-eyed myself. I remember it like it was yesterday, that perceptive change.
And I think with shame, you know, there were things I was ashamed of until I said them out loud.
Mm.
And I did this, it was called a poster back for this conference for global transformation. I think it was back in 2019. And I did this poster. And that's kind of... Sorry, my nose runs when I cry. So that's just the way it is. But I did this poster and it was called Saying What Can't Be Said. And what I had people do was put stuff on a sticky note that they've never told anybody. And it was anonymous. So that they just wrote it and put it on the wall. And it was so powerful because people said stuff like, you know, their uncle, or they knew someone who had murdered someone, or someone had HPV, or someone had this issue and went and got help the next day. And it was just a matter of saying it, even though they were writing it anonymously, that had them be able to turn the corner on it and stop being ashamed and take action. And I realized, wow, the shame of keeping it in, that's what keeps the shame. And if you can say it, then you can get free.
Yeah.
Or that's
what's that expression, you know, the truth shall set you free.
Yeah.
I think that I totally believe that. I've seen that. And that's some of the stuff in this book, like the chapter, like on letting go. What I also realized, this whole, what we're talking, you know, the truth shall set you free. Like, that's so true about many things, right? Not just about revealing what I'm ashamed of, but also being able to apologize when I'm an asshole. Like, how often do we keep that in, you know, feeling bad about ourselves? I know I've done this where I, you know, I yell at the customer service person and then I, you know, feel bad about myself for the rest of the day. And what I've learned is that when I apologize to that person, when I say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, that was so inappropriate, I feel better. You know, yeah. That shame comes off, that self-hate comes off. And I just was mentioning the book because what I realized after I wrote the book was that some of these chapters, like letting go, awareness, some of the others are really ideas that cross a lot of different religions, philosophies. They do. They're big ideas, forgiveness,
yeah,
gratitude. They're very big ideas, but your example of speaking truth is another big idea. And the best bits that we get from that. And I realized that after I wrote the book, like some of this isn't easy to take action on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not easy to let go. It's not easy to feel gratitude. It's one thing to say I'm grateful, but to feel it. And these are not, and forgiveness, these are not easy things that we can just jump into. It takes a bit of work, but I guess I'm just responding to your example because look how powerful that was.
Well, yeah, I want to tell one story because it's there for me to say, but and then we'll go to the commercial break. But, you know, the thing about perfection. So I missed a call with a potential guest on Friday. I just, I thought it was a woman. Anyway, he had rescheduled it. I just missed it. And so I sent an apology. You know, the guy said, where were you? The publicist said, where were you? And I said, well, I made a mistake. You know, I apologized 5 times, you know, if you want to reschedule. And finally, the guy said, nope, he has no tolerance for, you know, whatever, something. And I said, okay, I appreciate the feedback. And I said, I made a mistake. And when a guest makes a mistake, I give them a second chance. I said, but given his topic, which was adultery, there's probably some trust issues. And I'm making this up. I don't know if that's true, but I said, given his topic, I'm not really surprised, but thank you for letting me know. And that was it. And I probably didn't need to add the second part, but I was just like, you know what? I'm giving up feeling bad. I made a mistake. I'm admitting it. I'm not perfect. I scheduled something at the same time and I didn't look at my phone and I just missed it. And the thing about perfection, that's perfection is being perfectly human and making mistakes. And if we don't allow ourselves to make mistakes, then how are we going to live?
Yeah.
You can't do much if you're afraid to make a mistake. And I have been. I've been very careful all my life. But you know what? It doesn't give me a powerful life to be careful.
Right.
Just I'm letting that go as of like last week because I can't prevent someone from getting upset. I could do my best, but you know, that's been my life and I can't. They get mad anyway.
Right.
And here I am suppressing myself, trying to keep them happy, and they get upset anyway. So I'm done. So that was a great lesson. It was a great lesson, actually. And that was that reminded me of your perfection chapter.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. Well said. Yeah, we do that. Absolutely. I've done that too, where we don't want to say a truth thinking how it, you know, because it'll affect somebody else. And rather than just being truthful to who we are and letting the chips fall where they fall and sell. And who people truly are and how they respond, which in this case, you got to see.
Yeah, right. And, you know, maybe it wasn't a good fit. So anyway, all right, we'll be right back. We're going to go to our sponsor and then we'll come back with the rest of the story. Okay.
Has social emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Welcome back, and thank you as always to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, to your homes, this platform can really make a difference for you. Parents love it because it gets their kids talking to them. Teachers love it because it takes the kids out of their heads and their anxiety and all that and gets them back connected to their hearts where they can learn. So behavior improves. Learning improves, and school is a much more fun and productive place. So thank you again to Kikori. And then my books, I'm going to go through them quickly because we want to bring Jill back. Real Talk. This is what we were just talking about, which is saying what you're afraid to say to be able to have the life you want. This was something that was difficult for me, but when I started doing it, I saw how my life opened up, how miracles started happening. So I recommend this. You can find them all on Amazon. This is my 3rd book. Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. This was me wanting to find more techniques for getting from the left side of life where things were kind of bleak to the right side where things were more fun and joyful. So I put my techniques that I found in a book. It helped me just really stop fixing myself and start having fun. That's the subtitle. So if you find yourself on the left side and you want some really fun and easy techniques, get this book. And if you want to hear my story, The Second Piece of French Toast, this was my memoir from when I was definitely in a stuck place. And this is what I did to get my life in a place like Jill, where it's the more of the life that I want. So that's all I'm going to say about that. It's a courageous book. Don't judge me. And welcome back, Jill.
Thanks. I'll check out those books. They sound great.
Yeah, thank you. So we were talking, we just talked about perfection, okay, and letting go. And anything else come to you that you want to share about in writing the book? I know you said what the feedback that you're getting from people. Well,
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I really thought that the messages from guidance, of course, when I wrote the book, would be what people would be excited about. And the feedback I'm getting, however, is really more about my stories. And I think that's because, well, the feedback I'm getting, people are saying they love the book, which, of course, I'm very proud to hear. I love that. I love hearing people love the book. But my stories are resonating with people, which I was surprised because they're so personal to me, right? Didn't expect that. And what I'm hearing is that people are, as I said, relating to the point where it's helping them, my stories are helping them to uncover some of their own feelings and their own emotional baggage and the things that they're struggling with. And one person said that the grief chapter got her writing in her journal. And by the way, every chapter ends with a few questions that jumpstart maybe you know, the reader's own musings on the topic. But the I'm just surprised that it's my stories that are that people are finding is helping, you know, helping them to uncover some of their own senses. You know, I have shame too, people are saying, you know, that kind of thing. Really learning a lot from my personal story. So that's been unexpected. And I'm grateful to hear that they have meaning for people.
Well, you know, the guidance part is like wisdom, mm-hmm. but you take it and put it in a story. And stories are what people can remember. You know, like that's what I've learned. They don't remember facts. They remember stories, like in sales. And your stories are what, you know, it's kind of like, okay, blah, 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 do this, you know, joy or jealousy or whatever. Like, you know, it's kind of, you know, jealousy creates a bitter taste that feeds on toxins you cannot afford to digest. But with awareness, jealousy enlightens you to what you want. So there's a whole page of this for those of you who don't have it. And then next, Jill takes that and puts a story of her own in it. So this was the music part. So you get to see it in a real life. So it takes the guidance and puts it to where people can relate to. So I think it's all valuable, but what people are going to remember is your story.
Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah.
I think, you know?
That seems to be what's going on, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the ones, unless you were going to say something else, I wanted to talk about your mother chapter and the forgiveness. I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah.
That how, so Jill created a group. You created a group. Mm-hmm. So to help with the forgiveness, right? And what did it start with?
Well, I had been struggling, you know, with this relationship with my mom. It was this, I felt very obligated to call her. We live on opposite coasts. She's still in the Bronx. I'm here on the West Coast. But I felt really cold. I mean, I had no emotional connection to my mother. It just felt like there was a board, like a wall between us always. And I know she felt it too. And
was it always there, like from birth, or did it happen like after the surgery?
Well, it felt like it started, it feels like it started maybe when I was about four. You know, I was born with a disability.
Right.
And I don't know, you know, why that happened. I mean, back then, right, she was a smoker, who knows, but it started young anyway. And then of course, probably got worse after surgery, but you know, and I had a lot of anger, internal anger. I couldn't, there was just a lot that I was holding on to. And guidance, that's the energy I call, by the way, which just means help. I cannot explain this energy I'm channeling, whatever. I just know that it's love.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful and it's wisdom. So I accept it. But back to that, they said, you know, start a forgiveness circle. Mm. You know, other women, they don't talk like this, but I'm paraphrasing, you know, other women that also have this kind of relationship with their moms. So do that. And I did. And I called, there were three friends I had at the time, or four, I can't quite remember, but yeah. And we did. And guidance said that they would help us. It would help us to understand, that they would give us information. But the most important piece, and it's in this chapter, is that we had to forgive ourselves first. Mm. Because we all felt like bad daughters. And that was another shame we were carrying, that we were terrible in terms of not being able to feel love or being judgmental about these mothers that we had, rather than being able to understand them or offer sympathy to who they were, or to get to know who they were as people. We just felt the burden of being what we all felt, unloved, unsupported. We were all victims. Mm. Exactly. And we had to forgive ourselves all of that before we could forgive our mothers. And some of us did, were able to do that. I did. I was able to see my mom through the work we did with guidance and some of the readings that I found. I personally was able to see her in a different way.
Wow. How many weeks do you think that took of your...
Well, it was...
Let me go back.
Yeah.
When did you realize the forgiveness started with you first? Or was that part of guidance?
Yeah, it was part of what guidance said. I read in the book that that's what they told us. That's what they told me. And then that's what I told my women friends. And we were all like, what? Like, you know, we didn't understand it at first, but it did. That's the truth. Forgiveness really is forgiving somebody else. What I've learned for myself, forgiving somebody else is really about forgiving myself. Mm. It really is. It's a practice of self-love, because when we're holding on to whatever our emotional stuff is that ties us to not being able to forgive, really we're stuck and we're hurting ourselves.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think that was a big turning point in your life?
Yeah, learning about forgiveness was huge. You know, what I said earlier about these precepts being so big and not easy to understand or easy to accomplish. Yeah, letting go, forgiveness, suffering, these are things that have understanding these and doing the work, the personal work, not just understanding. You know, like you said, the guidance offers the wisdom. But my stories show that I did the work on myself to really change, really take in what letting go means, what forgiveness means in my life, what gratitude really means. And that's when change, that's how I've changed my life. That's how I've changed the course of my life, so that I do feel better about my life. I feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful to be in this part of my life. It's like all of the years of self-hate and shame and hiding and feeling like no one would love me and feeling somehow different and negative and feeling that there was something wrong with me. All of that feels like a dream now.
Wow. So if somebody, let's say they were going to get the book, and as you say, they were going to do the work, what does that actually mean? Like, how do they know how to do the work?
Well, I think to do the work, one needs a lot of support.
Okay.
I have support from the universe. And I know, you know, I go when I'm struggling, that's who I still go to. I get these profound messages that come through me in such a profound way that I feel it's so, the truth of what they say about self-love and self-awareness, that it really, I feel grateful I have that. But I think another way that people can get...
How do you get the messages? Is it like you just hear it within? Like, how does it happen?
Different ways. I get actual words that come through. Like, they give me messages that help me. I also get feelings in my body. I also get images.
Hmm.
I also get images.
Wow.
And one thing that I think really is, when you ask that question, how can people change?
Yeah.
I think the most...
Do the work. How can they do the work? Yeah.
I think the two most maybe important chapters in the book are the first one, which is awareness is all.
Okay.
And emotions.
Wow.
And when they taught me that awareness, that personal awareness, that being aware of self and where we're at is the entry point to profound change. Like, I'll give you an example. When I'm struggling, and even when I'm not, but when I'm really struggling, like I had a day of just very intense anxiety, right? So I sat in a chair, I closed my eyes. It's a form of meditation, like what they call mindful meditation, just to be aware. I'm right here.
Yeah.
Me with me. This is awareness, right? And when I did that, this is years ago, but when I did that exercise, I realized that my body was vibrating. My body was, you know, anxiety, physically vibrating. And I felt like I was across the room. That's awareness. That's not me hiding. That's not me sleeping. That's me being awake to who I am and what I'm doing to self. And that much awareness, according to guidance, and I know this is true because it works for me, can change me in a moment, right? I saw myself over there. I realized what I was doing, me with me. This is not what my mother's doing to me. This is not what my job is doing to me, right? It's in some ways, it's very basic and very simple to give ourselves the opportunity to just accept where we're at. And in that moment, make a choice. Do I want to continue to suffer this anxiety or am I going to change it? And according to guidance, when we're in that position, it's not about asking, how am I going to change it? I can't change it. What am I going to do? Because that just leads to confusion. It's just about realizing it's happening. It's happening. I'm doing this. And according to guidance, and this has worked for me, if I keep doing that, if I keep living in the suffering of that without judgment, just going, wow, this is what I'm doing. I did it on Tuesday. I felt this way on Thursday. Eventually you do that enough and it changes.
Wow.
Because something finally says inside of me, wow, why am I doing this to myself? And then, of course, if you need support, if you need a therapist or you need change it, you know, like figure out ways, read a book, read my book, your book. There are ways, but it really does start with that and also emotions. They told me many years ago that emotions are the gift to God. It's the gift that we have as humans. We are not only capable of having emotions, animals do too, but we're actually capable of discerning our emotions. And I was somebody, and I write this in my book, who had no clue what an emotion was. I mean, I was having anger, I was having joy, I was having happiness, I remember being in a relationship. This person stepped out on me, right? We were breaking up. And I remember the therapist, we went to a couple therapists. And I remember the therapist saying to me, and I think this is in the book too, Jill, do you feel betrayed? Because this person stepped out, you know, the relationship had an affair. And I didn't even know what that was. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So emotions, it's like, if I can accept, it's what you were saying earlier, Hillary, about stating clearly, I screwed up. Yeah, I did. I made a mistake. It's if I can just say, yeah, I'm angry. I have a right to be angry. If I can just say, you know what? Yeah, I'm hurt.
Yeah.
I'm affected. It's freeing. And that's when, and you know, I don't mean to get all this, you know, maybe.
Yeah, we do have to wrap up. So I want to hear more, but we also have to wrap up. So I'm like, but yeah, no, this has been really fabulous. And I totally recommend Jill's book for everyone, really. But
thank you.
How would you want to leave the world? If you could leave a message, if you could have your book read and guidance and whatever, what would be your vision, say 5 years from now, if you could have what you wanted?
I really believe I'm going to get teary-eyed. And obviously, this is deep in my belief system, but I really believe that self-love is not a selfish act. That some of the problems that we're facing in the world is because we are, in general, humans are not in touch with how they're affecting themselves. And the more I think we can be in touch with how we affect ourselves, then I think we can then understand how we're affecting others. So I do believe that all healing starts here, that healing for the world starts here, that healing for, you know, if I'm doing better for myself, we all know this, I can do better for, you know, my stepkids, my husband, right? We all know this. We see it every day. When we're out of sorts with everything. We're not decompartmentalized. If we're having a crappy day at work, that affects us. And so I think being mindful, being aware, being more willing to do what's difficult, to love ourselves. It's easier said than done, but I think it's a good starting point. I really do, because then we would know how to deal with our anger in a productive way. We would know how to have more compassion. I really believe that's true. Loving ourselves, self-acceptance, being mindful of where, of who, of what is happening here. Yeah. I think it's profound.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for the work you've done. Thank you for bringing us guidance. Thank you for bringing us you.
Thanks, Hillary, for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.